Come on. Nothing's happened, just so you know. I'd never do that to you.
I know, she said. But maybe you should.
What?
I think he's stuck. He doesn't want to break my heart, maybe.
Oh, he said, sliding off the raft and into the water. He waded over and leaned against the side of the pool by her legs.
Do you love him?
She asked, looking down. That doesn't matter.
Yes, it does. Do you? I think maybe you do.
I think so, yeah, he said. Sorry.
We've never had sex, you know. Not once.
I didn't. We don't really talk about that kind of stuff.
Never?
It can't be games and TV all the time. It sort of is, though. He isn't one for serious conversation. I'm sure you know that.
I do, but I think he's just scared. Maybe he's waiting for you.
This is so fucking weird. What is it you want me to do, Lisa?
She'd never seen him so frustrated, and all at once, she realized how heavy this must have been weighing on him. Maybe he'd loved Clark this whole time. If Janice could find her soulmate at Camp Christ is Risen, then surely it was possible for the two of them to fall in love playing dorky strategy games and watching shows about space travel.
Tell him how you feel, she said.
She was holding back tears that had somehow found a way to fill her eyes.
What if you're wrong?
I'm never wrong, she said. Tell me a good reason you two aren't perfect together, and I'll let you off the hook. I can learn to deal with this. I'd rather it be you than anyone else. It'll just be weird at first. Then maybe we'll laugh about it someday. Like, hey, remember when Clark and Lisa were together? That was a mistake, wasn't it?
No one's going to say that.
And then she saw that look on his face and was ready to help him count to 10 and breathe slowly and get out of the pool. But this time, it wasn't a panic attack. He was crying.
I tried so hard not to love him, Lisa. Please know that, he said quietly.
I do, she said. It's not easy.
See why I am the way I am? You people are too complicated.
You're outside right now, and you're in love.
You're one of us, dude. Shit, he said. I can't do it.
You can, she said. I know you can. And even if I'm wrong, won't you be glad you told him, so it's not torturing you?
I guess, he said. But what if he never talks to me again?
He's not like that, she said. He's Clark. He'll be okay.
So if he wouldn't tell you, what makes you think he'll tell me?
He won't have to, she said. You'll both just know. It's like that with love.
Well, the second I step outside, everything starts going to total shit.
There's no escaping it.
What?
Life.
Say you're sure, he said. Please.
She thought about the question for a few seconds. She was sure of many things, that she wanted as far away from Upland as possible, that her mother would always be sad and lonely, and that Solomon would keep getting better, with or without her. These were inevitabilities. Time would prove that. But was this inevitable, too? Were Solomon and Clark meant to be together?
Yeah, she answered. I'm sure.
Chapter 25. Solomon Reed. By all accounts, Solomon was doing better than ever. He had friends, he was going outside again, and his panic attacks were at a 3-year low. Everything was looking up for him, considering how he'd spent the last few years. But now, with the thought of Clark secretly reciprocating his feelings, and what that could mean for the three of them, Solomon couldn't help wondering how quiet and safe his life would still be had the two of them never shown up. He didn't have much time to think about what he'd do, though, because just an hour after Lisa left, he heard someone banging on the front door. It was Clark, covered in sweat and bent over trying to catch his breath. "Are you okay?" Solomon asked from inside the house. I just... he said through his heavy breathing. I just ran like 4 miles, I think. From your house? Yeah. Impressive. Is it 1,000,000 degrees out or what? Come in, Solomon said, stepping out of the way. I'll get you some water. Clark followed him into the kitchen and chugged 2 whole glasses of water. He leaned back against the counter, his hair dripping with sweat, and looked over at Solomon like he needed to tell him something. For a split second, Solomon got a rush in his chest, like maybe it was about to happen. Like the world he ran away from had still managed to send someone just for him. All Clark had to do was say it. What did she tell you? He asked instead. She said you guys had a fight? Solomon gripped the sides of the counter where he sat and tried not to let Clark see him shake.
Did she tell you what it was about?
Sort of.
She thinks we're having a torrid affair or something.
Clark started to laugh, but stopped himself when he saw his friend's face.
I think I love you, Solomon said, staring down at the floor.
Oh, don't do that, man.
Why?
You know why.
Oh my God, Solomon said. She was wrong.
Sorry, Clark said.
For what?
That this is the way it is? I don't know. Sorry, I can't be different.
This is the weirdest day of my life.
Mine too, Clark said. Why doesn't she believe me?
I don't know.
We ruined your life, haven't we? We just showed up and brought all this bullshit with us.
You haven't ruined anything.
It'll be fine, right? Things will go back to normal and we'll laugh this all off.
We will?
Of course we will, Clark said. Unless I wake up gay one day, and then everybody wins.
Clark cringed, obviously afraid it hadn't landed right. But Solomon knew he was just being Clark, the guy who could always find a way to make you feel better than you should be feeling. Shut up, Solomon said. I can't believe she did this.
What do I do, man?
Do you still love her?
I think so.
You think so?
I've never fallen out of love before, so I think I still do, but maybe I just don't know the difference.
You'd know, Solomon said. You just have to look at your life before her, and then after her, and see which one you like better.
I don't think it's that easy.
Shouldn't it be, though? Solomon hopped down from the counter and waved for Clark to follow him. They walked out into the backyard and each took a seat by the pool. For a few minutes, neither of them said anything. It seemed like a perfectly normal thing to do by a pool, to sit there soaking up the sun in silence. But it was about to make Solomon lose his mind.
Why does she hate it here so much? He asked.
She's not like us, man.
What do you mean?
Her family. There's always some drama. Her mom. She's not great. She's nice enough, but everything's got to be about her. You live long enough with somebody like that, and getting as far away as possible becomes your best option. I think that's what happened with Lisa's dad. But she never talks about it.
And you like it here?
I do. It's home, you know? I've got my family. I've got you now. I don't need to leave.
Me neither.
Dude, I hope you don't take this the wrong way or anything. But I'd switch places with you in a second.
Solomon believed him, too. It was the thing they had most in common. All they wanted was a quiet place to be invisible and pretend the world away. And that's exactly what they had before things got weird. Now, no matter what they told themselves or each other, it would always be different. After all, no first love goes away overnight. Especially one that's always right in front of you, but just out of your reach.
Chapter 26. Lisa Prater. "Are you okay?" Lisa's mother shouted, standing in the driveway where Lisa had been sitting for 10 minutes with her car engine running. "What?" Lisa yelled, opening the door. "Oh, good. I thought you were dead. What are you doing home?" "We need to talk." Lisa followed her mother inside, and after a few minutes of watching her bang around in the kitchen as she made tea, Lisa couldn't take it anymore. "Mom, it's been a really long, weird day, so if you could just..." "Ron got a job," she interrupted. "Okay. In Arizona." "Oh. And after talking about it a lot, a whole lot, well, we just think it's best to go our separate ways."
"You're getting a divorce?"
"Eventually, yes." She was surprised her mom wasn't crying. She almost seemed relieved about it, so Lisa wasn't sure if she should console or congratulate her.
"You seem okay."
"I am. It just wasn't meant to be, I guess."
"Sorry," Lisa said.
"Are we moving again?"
"No, honey. I'm keeping the house."
"Thank God."
"Are you going to tell me what's wrong? Why you were catatonic out there in the car?"
"I think it's over with Clark."
And then her mom cried. Not much, but she was definitely holding back tears as she listened to the whole story. Lisa told her everything, too, every little detail, from the essay to the conversation she'd just had with Solomon. And she told her about Clark and the secret she was so convinced he was keeping, too.
"I don't see it," her mom said. "But what do I know? Everybody's gay these days."
"I guess I thought we'd always be together."
"That's what everyone thinks when they're 17, believe me."
"Weren't you with my dad at 17?
"Yep, and you see how that turned out. I thought I'd be Mrs. Jacob Prater forever. He wasn't gay, he was just an asshole. Funnier than anyone I've ever met, but a total asshole."
"Clark's the nicest person I know," Lisa said.
"Me too. But if this is the way it is, then what can you do? At least it isn't your fault things didn't work out."
"At least."
"Is Clark going to tell him about the essay?"
"I don't think so," she said. "But who knows? I never got the chance to ask him not to."
"You really want into that school, don't you?"
"It's the second best psych program in the country," Lisa said.
"Your experience with mental illness. You could just write anything. Seems like a dumb topic to me."
"They're looking for the right story," she defended. "Something ambitious and courageous."
"Lying isn't courageous.
You should know."
"Watch it," her mom snapped. "Don't start a fight just because it's the easiest thing to do."
"Sorry."
"So, can you fix it?"
"Probably not."
"Lisa," her mom said, looking her right in the eyes. "I've never heard you say you couldn't do something. Not in your entire life."
Even when Lisa was super busy, she and Clark always kept in touch with a quick phone call or a text, just to check in. They'd even talked while she was at camp, long enough to say hello and discuss Solomon's progress. But now, a day after he kicked her out of his house, Lisa hadn't heard a word out of Clark. She hadn't heard from Solomon either, which made her worry even more. Were the two of them together now? Maybe Solomon had taken her advice, professed his love, and they were already living happily ever after without her. But didn't she deserve to know? She was the only reason they even knew each other. And you'd think Clark, of all people, would have the decency to break up with his girlfriend before getting his first boyfriend. What the hell was going on? When she called Clark's house, Drew answered and said he'd spent the night at Solomon's. Now Lisa was almost certain the truth had finally come out,
To her knowledge, he'd never stayed the night at Solomon's, not even once. So why was he suddenly doing it now? Later that evening, at just about dark, Lisa grabbed her keys and walked out to her car. She didn't know what she'd say or do, but she had to see them. And if it hadn't been such a weird week and she hadn't spent the afternoon watching Ron pack up his things while her mom cried in the kitchen, Lisa might not have had it in her to drive to Solomon's and climb over the back fence. But she did. And now she was standing in the backyard, the only light coming from the swimming pool in front of her. And before she could turn around to face the house, she heard the glass door sliding open. "Lisa?" Solomon asked. He was standing in the doorway in swim trunks. "Hey," she said. "You alone?" Right when she asked it, Clark stepped out behind him holding two cans of soda.
"Lisa," he said, frozen in place. "Hi."
"I guess nobody's taking calls today," she said.
"Sorry," Clark said. "My phone died last night and I didn't bring my charger."
"You stayed the night?" she asked. They were all still standing there, Clark and Solomon by the door, and Lisa about 10 feet in front of them, just barely visible in the pool light.
"Stayed too late and didn't want to walk home."
"Do you want to come sit down?" Solomon asked, shooting Clark a look asking for approval.
"Yeah, come on," Clark said. "It's freezing."
They walked over to the pool, and Clark draped a towel over his bare shoulders. Then he threw one to Lisa and one to Solomon, who each did the same. He took the seat right between them, and they both stared at him, expecting him to speak first. "You were wrong," he said to Lisa in an almost amused but still quiet tone.
"I was?"
"Not gay," Solomon added, shaking his head.
"Shit,"
she said, but it was low and weak, not angry. She sat there for a few seconds, not looking up at them. She wasn't one to blush, but she was sure her cheeks were on fire, and she hoped the darkness would cover it up so she wouldn't be mortified even more.
"At least you didn't let it get out of hand," Clark said sarcastically.
"So I guess you told him then?" Lisa said to Clark.
"What? No."
He shook his head and widened his eyes so she would drop it, but it was too late.
"Told me what?"
Solomon asked. She wanted so badly to lie, to have just a little more time before being unmasked as a complete monster. But it was over now. It had to be over.
"About the essay,"
she said, closing her eyes tightly.
"What essay?" "Shit," Clark said.
"Solomon, it seemed like such a good idea, and I didn't know it would be like this. I didn't know you would be like this, that you'd be you. And now..."
"Lisa, what the hell are you talking about?" "It's an admissions essay,"
Clark said,
"to Woodlawn."
"So what?" he said.
"I mean, what about it?"
"They give one full paid scholarship a year to the candidate with the best essay," Lisa said.
"I'm really confused. It's supposed to be about her personal experience with mental illness," Clark blurted out.
"It's a psychology program?"
Solomon asked.
"Yeah."
"I thought you wanted to be a doctor."
"I never..."
"You never said what kind," Solomon interrupted. "So I guess I'm..." "You're her personal experience with mental illness," Clark said.
"You knew?" Solomon asked. Clark just nodded his head with this expression of total defeat on his face.
"You guys need to leave,"
Solomon said quietly. His voice was deep and sad and nearly unrecognizable.
"Saul, I..."
Clark began.
"Leave,"
he said, standing up. He started to pace along the edge of the pool, and he let the towel fall from his shoulders and into the water.
"I'll get that," Lisa said.
"Leave it alone," Solomon shouted. "Get out! Go home! Both of you! Go home!"
Tears were smeared across his face, and even in the faint pool light, you could see the panic in his eyes. Lisa stepped toward him, but he jerked back, almost falling into the pool. She begged him to sit down and take deep breaths, and so did Clark, but he was too far gone.
The more they tried to help, the more he paced and twitched and yelled for them to leave. It didn't take long for his parents to come outside, and when his dad put an arm around him, he shoved him to the ground. Then, just as he went in to try again, Solomon took his right hand, raised it into the air, and then slapped it hard across the side of his own face. And then he did it again, so hard that his mom whimpered a little and ran over to hold his arms back. Through the house and out to the front door, they could still hear him yelling. Lisa closed the door behind her and stopped to take a deep breath, like she'd just escaped from a monster in a dream. Even from the driveway, as they got into Lisa's car, they could hear Solomon's parents trying to calm him down. But he wasn't calming down. He was yelling and throwing things. Lisa heard something hit the side of the house. Maybe he'd thrown a chair or one of those little garden gnomes his mom had all around the yard. Then, just as Lisa was about to crank the car, one loud yell from Solomon's dad echoed through the neighborhood. "Damn it, Solomon, stop!" And everything got really quiet. As they backed out of the driveway, Lisa eyed the house with tears trickling down her cheeks. She looked over to Clark, who had his face completely covered with his hands. His legs were shaking up and down like he couldn't stop them, and a few times on the drive to his house, she thought she heard him crying. Solomon's world had become his, too, and it looked like she'd just destroyed it. It was all over now. After she dropped a still silent Clark off at home, her goodbye never met with a response, she drove back to Solomon's and parked across the street. She stayed there, watching the dark, quiet house for over an hour. She didn't do it because he needed her. She did it because she was afraid the farther she got from him, the better off he'd become. And despite spending most of her time thinking about leaving, Lisa wasn't ready to go just yet.
Chapter 27. Solomon Reed. He'd been hitting himself like that for years, but it was the first time anyone outside of his family had seen it. Now he would always remember the looks on their faces right after the first strike. They'd been so real, Clark and Lisa. It had felt so real that he'd never stopped to question why it was happening. Why they'd waste their time on someone like him in the first place. He lay awake that night, touching the side of his face a few times, remembering what he'd done. It hadn't happened in a long while, maybe more than a year. It hadn't happened that day at school either. But at home, that same day he'd jumped into the fountain, he'd gotten so anxious pacing around the living room, listening to his parents try to calm him, that he suddenly just lost it completely and slapped his face. He immediately started crying, confused and guilty, looking up at his parents like he had no idea how it had happened. And really, that's the way it always was with the hitting. It would happen so fast, his body shaking to release the tension built up from all the thoughts swirling through his mind, and all the air he was having trouble breathing, and all the loud beating of his own heart ringing in his ears. It had to get out. And that was the path it chose. Slap. Instant relief. The next day, Solomon didn't go outside. It was just like every other day before he'd met them. Familiar in a way that made him nostalgic and nauseated. Part of him wished he could go back in time and tear Lisa's weird-ass friendship letter in half. He thought maybe he could pretend them away, like he did so many other things. Out of sight, out of mind. He looked up the Woodlawn University School of Psychology's admission guidelines and read all about the John T. Vorkheim Scholarship, which was full-paid tuition awarded to the candidate with the highest need of assistance and highest likelihood of bringing a new perspective to the field of psychology based on his or her personal experience with mental illness. "Shit," he said aloud, to nothing but an empty house. A week later, he still hadn't gone outside. And he was still refusing to take calls from Clark or Lisa. He spent most of his time holed up in his bedroom, with the door shut, and for the most part, his parents left him alone. They knew Solomon better than anyone, and if he needed the time to himself, they weren't about to take it away. When Clark showed up to get his van, Solomon couldn't talk himself into seeing him. So Clark said a quick hello to Valerie and followed Jason to the garage, where they got the engine started and had him on his way. Afterward, Solomon's dad knocked lightly on his door before walking in and sitting on the edge of his bed.
"Sort of sucks to see it go," he said.
"What? The van?"
"Yeah. Got used to having a project. Thing barely runs, but at least it runs."
"How is he?"
"Sad, Saul." He looked pretty sad.
"Yeah, well,
I don't think he meant any harm," his dad interrupted. "Guilty by association, I guess. But he's been a good friend to you."
"But he knew. How do I know if any of it was real?"
"Because you know. Come on."
"I don't know what I know."
"You ever going outside again?"
his dad asked, looking him right in the eyes. "Why does it matter?"
"I can't answer that," he said, stepping out into the hallway. "But when you can tell me it doesn't, I'll quit asking."
Later that day, Solomon's dad was reading a book in the living room when his son walked through, still wearing the pajamas he'd had on for days, a guilty look on his face.
"It emerges,"
his dad said,
"from the room of eternal stench."
"Okay, that's not fair. Have you had a bath this week?"
"Maybe not."
"Where are you going?"
"Outside, I think."
"Look, I'm sorry for..."
"Dad," he interrupted. "Don't be." Solomon looked out at the blue water across the yard and then over at his dad, who pretended not to be watching. Then he turned back to slide the door open. This thing he'd done hundreds of times, like it was no big deal. Only as soon as the outside air touched his face, his heart started beating faster and faster, and he suddenly couldn't catch his breath. Everything turned so loud and shaky that suddenly the pool looked farther away, too far to reach. And by the time his dad got over to him, he was sitting on the tile floor with his knees up and his face tucked between them. When it was over, he looked up at his dad with this hopeless expression on his face. And in that silent moment, just before he walked back to his room and shut the door, he knew they were thinking the same thing. That maybe it would always be this way. Eventually, Solomon would stop trying to go outside altogether. The panic attacks would subside, and they'd all pretend those few months away, not wanting to feel the pangs of nostalgia it gave them to think about the two weird kids who showed up one day and made everything better. Solomon stayed in his room until his grandma came over for dinner that night. He knew he wouldn't be able to avoid her, so he was dressed and ready when she got there. He tried to plant a smile on his face, but it wasn't working, and she could tell. So when she went to kiss his cheek, she whispered, "You're okay," into his ear and patted his back lightly. He didn't talk much at dinner, which was easy since his grandma was over. He just chewed his food in silence while she rambled on and on about a difficult new home buyer she'd been dealing with earlier that day. He'd been listening to her describe the ins and outs of the suburban realty world for his entire life, and it was always a lot more darkly humorous and twisted than you'd think. This particular story involved an extramarital affair and a poltergeist. No joke. After dinner, Grandma asked if he wanted to get his butt kicked at a game of cards, and although he hesitated at first, he couldn't say no. She dealt a hand of canasta at the dinner table, eating her dessert and sipping coffee. Solomon's parents went to the kitchen to do dishes, and as soon as they were out of sight, he knew he was in danger. Grandma didn't mince words, and this was the first time he'd been alone with her since he'd gone back to his old ways. "Remember, twos and jokers are wild," she said. "Okay." 5 minutes in, and not a word had been spoken between them. She was typically an aggressive game player, but her shift from funny storyteller at dinner to serious poker-faced card shark was throwing Solomon for a loop. Eventually, at the end of one of his turns, he broke down and said something. "Listen, I'm sure I'll be able to go back out there sooner or later." She didn't respond at first, but instead set her cards down and took a sip of coffee. "I tried. I did. Earlier today, did Dad tell you? I bet he told you." "Solomon," she interrupted, "I don't care about that."
"Oh," he said. "I thought maybe you were..."
"Why haven't you seen your friends?" she asked.
"You know why."
"They were helping, you know. I've never seen you so happy."
"They were lying."
"So they're not perfect," she said. "You're better with them than without them."
"She was using me, Grandma," he defended. "She was using your crazy grandson to get into college. How does that make you feel?"
"I never said it was right. But do you really think that's all it was? You don't need to spend every day with someone just to write a few paragraphs, Solomon."
"Then she tells me Clark's gay, that she's sure of it, and of course he isn't after all. And now I'm back to where I started, and I wish I hadn't met either of them in the first place. That would make this better."
"You must really miss them," she said, stone-faced.
"I do."
"Let me tell you something," she said. "I spent a good part of my life being unhappy. I was stuck in my shitty little hometown for longer than I thought I could take. But I got out. It was life or death, and that decision led to every good thing that ever happened to me. Now, I don't know what you want your life to look like, and I won't pretend to understand what it feels like when you're at your worst. I can't imagine how awful it must be, but I know what it's like to constantly think about a life you aren't living. That's exactly how I felt when I was 16, and if there was anything I could have done about it, I would have. I know it's easier said than done. I know that. But you have to try, Solomon. Just look at me. The older I get, the smaller my world gets. And there's not a damn thing I could do about it either. Life is short, kiddo. You have to at least try to live it before you end up where I am, counting down the days till they decide to put you somewhere you can't escape from. That's what I have to look forward to, you know? Having someone else wipe my ass in some place full of dying people."
"Good Lord, Grandma."
"Now look at yourself," she said. "Young and smart. This world could be anything you want it to be. Maybe my time's running out, but at least I'm living. And if that's what this is for you, being here inside where nothing ever happens, where you think you're safe, then stay. Stay right here, and you let me know how that works for you. Because I'm guessing it'll never really be enough. Maybe not. I think you can do it," she said. "And you've got plenty of time before I wither away and die to prove me right." You said you've got, what, like 20 years left? At least. I quit smoking in the 80s, so maybe 25 or 30. You'll have your father's hairline by then, no doubt. Okay, fine. I promise I'll go outside before you kick it. Attaboy, she said, looking down at her cards. For the rest of the game, he kept picturing her stuck in a nursing home somewhere, sad and lonely and wishing he'd come see her, wishing he could. He was afraid of the world, afraid it would find a way to swallow him up. But maybe everyone was sometimes. Maybe some people can just turn it off when they need to. After his grandma left, all he could think about was growing old and running out of time. So he used the surprising rush of courage it gave him to walk back to his bedroom, dial Clark's phone number, and wait for an answer. Hello? Hey, he said, his voice raspy. Are you okay, man? I think so. I mean, yeah. I will be. I'm so sorry. I don't know what else to say. I bet you tried to talk her out of it, he interrupted. A few times. So why didn't you tell me? I was going to. Then you told me how you felt, and I didn't want to make it worse. Did you want to meet me, or was it part of her plan or whatever? I asked to meet you, he answered. But she told me it would help, too. You want to know how I know you love her? Solomon asked. How? Because you kept her secret. You protected her. I was protecting her and you, Clark corrected. Have you talked to her? No. She texts me every morning, but I haven't answered yet. Are you going to? After everything she's done? Yeah. Probably. How ridiculous is that? Not at all, Solomon said. I'd forgive you for the same. You know I came and got my van, right? The holodeck's not the same without it. How are you feeling? Do you really care, or are you asking for Lisa, so she can record it in her notes? I don't know what she was thinking, Clark said. But I know she wanted to help you. It wasn't just about her, man. If you can believe that. I'll work on it, Solomon said. I better go. Thanks for talking to me. Oh. Yeah. Of course, I'm really... Solomon hung up, because he knew if he heard any more, he'd start panicking. And then who knows how long it would be before he was breathing normal again, and not pacing around the room, or crying. He knew eventually, when he was able to see or talk to Clark without losing his mind, that things between them would be okay. As far as Lisa was concerned, though, he wasn't so sure when he'd be ready to see her again, or if he'd ever be. But it made him sad to think of his life without her. She'd be like that one missing game piece that you try to forget about or replace, but can never quite shake the memory of. And if he missed her this much after a week, then what would a month or a year feel like without her? Maybe he'd never have to find out. At least, that's what a big part of him was hoping.
Chapter 28. Lisa Prater. 2 weeks of radio silence from Clark and Solomon had driven Lisa to a very lonely, strange place. She'd even stayed up late several nights in a row watching reruns of Star Trek The Next Generation on cable. She liked to think that at least one of them was watching with her, or maybe they were watching together, despite everything she'd put them through.
It wasn't such a bad show, she discovered. It had some pretty cheesy parts in just about every episode, but when she was finally able to set that aside, Lisa started to see why Solomon and Clark loved it so much. She'd fully expected Solomon to shut her out. What she'd done to him was unforgivable, and she knew it could be a long time before she saw him again, if ever. But with Clark ignoring her calls and texts, Lisa was starting to worry that she'd lost him for good, too. So, after 13 days of restraining herself, Lisa drove over to Clark's and marched up the stairs to the front door. She knocked 3 times, hoping she wouldn't be left out there like she deserved to be. And when Clark's dad opened the door, she couldn't stop herself from giving him a hug.
"Oh, hi, Lisa," he said, lightly patting her back with one hand. "Get him out of the house, will you? He's driving me crazy."
She walked down the hall to Clark's half-open door and pushed it slowly, waiting for him to see her. The room smelled like him, like his deodorant and that cologne his mom bought him every Christmas. He was sitting on the floor, his back against his bed, and reading a book. When he saw her, and their eyes met, he didn't move. For a second, she thought maybe they'd laugh or something. If they both decided to brush the whole thing off as some big joke, then maybe they'd survive it.
"Sit down,"
he asked, moving his legs out of the way. Lisa took a seat on the floor across from him and, instinctively, started to lift her legs to set them on top of his, but she stopped herself just before he noticed. She'd planned to open with an apology, for it to be the very first thing out of her mouth, but he knew she was sorry. He knew everything about her.
"Have you talked to him?" she asked instead.
"Once."
"Is he okay?"
"I think so. It was brief."
"Clark, look, I..."
"Do me a favor, Lisa."
"Sure."
"Don't apologize."
"Okay," she said, not used to this kind of assertiveness from him.
"Good,"
he said.
"Let's figure us out later."
"What do we do about Saul?"
"It was the scariest thing I've ever seen,"
he said.
"He just lost it."
"I'm such an idiot," she said.
"You were supposed to change your mind."
"I was?"
"Yes!"
He raised his voice. "My God!" She'd never heard him talk to her like that before, with so much disappointment and anger in his voice. It actually frightened her a little to see this side of him she didn't know was there.
"I guess I gave you more credit than you deserve," he said. "Now I'm an asshole, too."
"Wow, thanks."
"You're welcome," he snapped.
"I don't know what happened," she said. "I got so caught up. And then Janice said,
'You know she hates me. Why would you listen to her?'"
"I don't know," she blurted out, hiding her face in her hands.
"And even if you were right, do you think I'd cheat on you? It's like you forgot who I was or something."
"I thought we were figuring us out later."
"Maybe there's no hope."
"For us?"
"For anyone," he said. "I'm betting Saul's not any better off than he was a week ago, and I could tell just by his voice that he was barely hanging on."
"Shit," she said quietly. "I am an asshole. I'm a total asshole."
"You're not a total asshole."
"I accused you of cheating, and I thought you were gay."
"Only one of those makes you an asshole," he said. "I should have realized you felt left out. Honestly, I just didn't think you cared that much."
"Why wouldn't I care?"
"Because, like I said before, all you think about is leaving."
"In a year?"
"Yeah, well, I don't want to spend the next year with someone who's just going to leave and forget about me."
"I want you to come with me," she said. "Have you even looked at any schools yet?"
"No," he said. "I like it here. I don't even know if I want to go to college anywhere."
"Oh, well, why all the water polo then?"
"Because I like it," he said, frustrated. "And I'm not worried about how every little thing I do is going to get me out of here. That's your thing, not mine."
She just looked at him for a second, wishing he'd take it back and say he'd been secretly applying to colleges in Maryland or D.C. But instead, he looked away from her as soon as their eyes met.
"Did he tell you he loved you?" she asked.
"Sure did."
And?
And it was weird, okay? It made me so sad. I bet this kind of shit happens all the time.
Probably, she said. You're so, I don't know, happy around him. Like, not bored and complainy like you are around your other friends.
Thanks,
he said.
Doesn't make me gay.
Of course it doesn't.
Look, I get it. It's not crazy. It's just frustrating. You know me. I didn't suddenly start keeping secrets overnight. He's my friend. He's our friend. I was just being his friend back.
I think you're the only reason he ever went outside, she said. Like, if he got better, then maybe you two could...
How could you possibly know that? He interrupted. They were digging a damn hole in the backyard before we ever showed up. I didn't do anything to help him.
Yeah, well, that makes two of us. A quiet fell over the room after she'd said it, that kind where you're sure the other person is going to say something you don't want to hear.
We can't just show up over there, can we? And hope he doesn't freak out?
Clark asked. No, she said. At least I can't.
I'm not going without you.
I'm so confused. Are we still together?
I don't know, he said. You're the one who wants to be a shrink. You telling me all this doesn't seem a little like self-sabotage?
You've spent too much time around me.
I listen, even when you think I'm not.
I love you, you know?
Lisa, he said, closing his eyes for a second and taking a deep breath.
She'd never seen him so frustrated.
2 weeks ago, you were so convinced I was gay that you told the only person in the world you shouldn't have. I'm not sure this is a healthy relationship anymore.
It was, though, she defended.
You remember when we first met?
Of course, in biology.
Physics,
he corrected.
I know, because I switched my schedule to be in there with you.
Huh?
Only good thing Janice Plutko ever did.
I had no idea.
You guys were always together, so I finally worked up the nerve to ask her for your number in homeroom. She gave me your schedule instead.
Oh.
I sort of fell in love with you during your speech freshman year.
That was my third best speech to date, she said.
You talked about social change, and I thought that was so funny. You were running unopposed for a freshman senator spot on the student council, he said, and you took it so seriously.
Maybe that should have been your warning.
Maybe, he said. But it was good, yeah?
Lisa knew a lot of things about Clark that no one else knew. She knew he called his grandfather every Sunday, like clockwork, and that he'd never had a sip of alcohol, despite, or maybe because, of having three older brothers. And she knew that as frustrated as he got with his mom, he never talked back to her or came home even a minute after curfew. Clark Robbins was honest and true, like some weird reincarnation of Abraham Lincoln. And without a little help, he'd let this breakup drag on forever just to spare her feelings. It was great, she said. Look, I realize my track record as a friend hasn't been so hot lately, but I think Solomon needs us. Both.
Since when does he hit himself?
Maybe always, she said. I'd know that if I actually tried to help him like I set out to do.
That's not your job.
No, it's not, she agreed. So,
I don't want to decide right now, he said, about breaking up.
Okay.
You want to see what I've been working on instead?
Sure. Just don't make me go back home yet. She followed Clark out to the apartment parking lot and couldn't believe it when they rounded a corner to see his old green van sitting right there as ugly as ever. You got your van back?
I only saw his mom and dad when I went to get it, though. They said he wasn't feeling well. Then he called me later that night and hung up before I could even apologize.
He's probably just embarrassed, Lisa said.
Of course he is. I broke his fucking heart.
I don't think I've ever heard you say fuck before.
I curse when I'm sad.
I don't think I've ever seen you sad, either.
It's all I can think about,
he said, leaning against the van.
Solomon stuck in that house forever with no one to talk to. We did that to him. We proved him right. And now we need to figure out how to fix it, or I'll never sleep again.
Clark, what Saul has is a very complicated disorder that is unpredictable by its very nature.
You're not a doctor yet, Lisa, and we've all got Wikipedia.
Fair enough, she said. But nothing we can do is going to cure him, that's what I'm saying. He needs years of therapy, maybe decades. Staying inside is one thing. Beating the shit out of yourself is another.
Would you still have done it, if you knew how bad he was?
Probably, she said. But clearly my decision-making skills are questionable.
At least you're honest, he said. You ready to see?
Clark walked around to the back of the van and opened the heavy double doors. The entire cab had been painted solid black, the floor, the ceiling, and both walls. As she looked inside, Clark just stood there with a proud expression on his face. I can't believe this, she said.
We totally gutted it. Took both rows of seats out. All the foam inside them was rotting, which is maybe why it smelled like death in there.
God, I'm just glad it wasn't an animal or something.
You and me both. Then we took up that gross carpet and ripped out the ceiling fabric.
I sure will miss that dick drawing your brother left with the Sharpie, Lisa said.
Yeah. Saul's dad thought that was pretty funny. He asked me if I wanted to keep it. Anyway, we also replaced the battery and all the belts. It's running a little better than before, but I think it still needs a lot of work.
So what's with the black paint?
I did that yesterday,
he said, showing her his spray paint stained hands.
I could have died from the fumes, but I had an idea and just decided to go for it. I need your help on the last part, though.
About an hour later, Lisa was staring into the back of the van, shaking her head, and Clark did the same thing, standing right beside her. She thought, just for a second, that maybe he'd reach over and squeeze her hand like he used to, this little thing that would silently take them back to what they were. I'm not sure this'll ever work, she said, still staring.
Maybe it doesn't have to, he said. Gestures, you know?
Lisa stayed for a while after that, eating takeout with Clark and watching some home renovation show that his sister put on. It was like old times, really, except for the wary looks she kept getting from Drew. Lisa knew she was pretty protective of her older brother, but this seemed more personal, like maybe Drew was upset that Lisa hadn't been coming around as often as she used to. So when Clark left the room to take a phone call, Lisa didn't wait too long before quietly getting up to follow him.
You there, buddy?
Clark said into the phone when she walked into his bedroom. What happened? She whispered.
I heard his dad's voice, and then he hung up.
Clark took the phone away from his ear, looked at the screen, and then looked up at Lisa. Do you think everything's okay? She asked. Then the phone rang, and they both saw Solomon's name on the screen. But as soon as he put it to his ear, Clark had to hold it away because Solomon was speaking so loudly on the other end.
I need you to come over. Can you come over? I need you to come over right now, Solomon said frantically.
Lisa's with me, okay?
Whatever. Just come over, please, he said before hanging up.
We'll take the van,
Clark said, rushing out and down the hallway. It barely runs.
It runs, he said, turning back to face her.
When they got there, all the lights were on, and they could see Solomon standing in the front window. Once out of the car, Lisa hurried to the door, and without even thinking about it, swung it right open to face him. He was ghost white, but she couldn't have ignored the red hand marks on the right side of his face if she tried. Not knowing what else to do, she stood there waiting for him to say something, to explain what was going on. But he wouldn't talk. Not even when Clark walked up behind her and asked if he was okay. Instead, he took a couple of steps forward and collapsed into Lisa's arms, burying his face in her shoulder.
Chapter 29 Solomon Reed
Saul?
Lisa said to him. He let her go and stood up, trying to calm down and gather his thoughts so he'd actually make sense. Clark took charge and put his arm around Solomon's shoulders, leading him over to the couch to sit down.
"My grandma,"
he said finally, his voice cracking.
"Oh my God," Lisa said. "Is she okay?"
"I don't know," he managed, closing his eyes tightly. "My dad ran in, said she was in a car wreck, and then ran back out. Then my mom called and said she was at Mountain View Medical."
"What do we need to do?" Clark asked.
"I promised her," Solomon said frantically. "I promised her I'd leave the house before she died."
"Saul, you don't..." Lisa began.
"I have to go,"
he said, standing up.
"I have to go, right? What if she's dying? What if this is my only chance?"
He paced around the room, looking at both of them, his panic still too strong to let him deal with the other feelings that seeing them had brought on. But they were there. He knew that much. And they didn't have to be.
"I can't do it," Solomon said. "I promised her, and I can't do it. There's no way. I haven't even been in the backyard since you guys left."
"Holy shit," Clark said suddenly, looking toward Lisa. "Are you thinking what I'm thinking?"
"Probably not."
"The van," he said, his eyes growing bigger.
"The van?"
Solomon asked.
"Oh my God, the van," Lisa said. "What about the van?"
Solomon shouted, flinging his arms into the air.
"We put a holodeck in it,"
Lisa yelled back, scaring the shit out of both of them.
"You did?"
Solomon asked.
"Yeah," Clark said. "Like today. I was going to surprise you."
"Will it work?" Solomon asked, turning toward Lisa.
"I don't know," she said.
"Aren't you going to be a shrink or something?"
Solomon asked.
"Say it'll work."
"It'll work."
Solomon and Lisa waited in the laundry room while Clark backed the van into the garage. A few seconds later, the clunky metal back doors opened and, from where they were standing, it was suddenly hard to tell where the interior of the van ended and the garage began. They'd painted it solid black and used yellow tape to block it off into big squares. There was even a black curtain or something separating the front of the van from the back, so when Solomon looked in, all he could see was the same pattern that was surrounding him in the garage.
"I think it looks pretty good," Clark said.
"You did all this for me?"
"Or maybe I just wanted one of my own," Clark said with a grin.
"You helped him?"
he asked Lisa.
"Yeah.
How's it look?"
"Perfect," he said.
He climbed inside, ducking his head down until he was in the center, and then taking a seat. He looked all around and then over to where they stood, watching him from just outside.
"How are you feeling?" Clark asked him.
"My heart's racing," he said. "And it smells like paint back here."
"Sorry."
"We need to hurry up," Solomon said. "I can do this, right?" "Want me to ride with you?"
Lisa asked. He nodded his head and patted the cold black floor beside him. He could forget who she was today. He could forget what she'd done just long enough to get through this. It was something he had to do. He needed her. He was better the second she showed up at his front door, and if there was anyone who could help him do this, it was her. So she climbed in, and they sat side by side facing the back doors. When Clark closed them, all they could see were yellow boxes filled with solid black nothingness. Lisa let one hand rest in between them, and as soon as Clark turned the ignition, Solomon's hand fell down onto hers.
"It's okay," she said calmly.
"We're going to just breathe and pretend we're back home."
"And what about when we get there?"
"You guys ready?"
Clark shouted from the front seat.
One second, Lisa answered. Look, maybe adrenaline will just kick in and you'll be fine.